Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Ryan Lehrer on WNYC. We have a poll on our It's Free Country Politics website, and we'll get to the Libya discussion later in the program, too. But the question that we have up is, should the international community involving U.S. warplanes, if necessary, impose a no-fly zone over Libya to stop Muammar Gaddafi from bombing and strafing protesters? Should the international community involving U.S. warplanes, if necessary, impose a no-fly zone over Libya to stop Gaddafi from bombing and strafing protesters, his own people? Go answer yes or no to that difficult question at itsafreecountry.org. Now, correction from what I said before the break, bonuses on Wall Street went down last year, not up. But overall compensation on Wall Street went up, even as the percentage of Wall Street tax revenues to the city and the state's coffers as a percentage of all tax revenues is really plummeting. Of course, during the height of the fiscal crisis, when the government was bailing out some of America's largest banks, there was a lot of outrage about the size of the Wall Street bonuses. But according to this new report by the state controller, Tom DiNapoli, the average bonus fell by 9% to employees in the city's securities industry last year as some aspects of financial regulatory reform began to take hold. Some of it is just deferred, so they'll get it later anyway. But again, that's only part of the story. Overall compensation for Wall Street workers was actually up by 6% last year, even as jobs are down by about 30,000 since 2008, and the percentage of tax revenues that the city and state get come less from Wall Street than they have in the past. So joining to discuss the implications of all this is the New York State Comptroller, Thomas DiNapoli. Controller DiNapoli, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Good to be back with you.
So the report concluded that while bonuses were down, overall compensation grew by 6% in 2010. And while there have been calls to rein in Wall Street, has anything actually changed?
Well, a couple of points, and you set up the highlights of our report right on target there. What we're really seeing, and we've been tracking the cash bonus pool trends for close to three decades, what we're seeing is that the pool has gone down, the average down by about 9%, the overall pool down by about 8%. But Wall Street certainly has come back. Overall compensation, as you point out, up 6%. And certainly in terms of profits, looking beyond the issue of the bonus pool, it was, based on our estimates, the second best year that Wall Street has had. So certainly the state and the city continues to depend on the sector of the economy. It's an important part of our revenue stream. But you're right. There's certainly a restructuring. It's less of a percentage of our revenue than it was before the meltdown. But I do think much of this has to do with the response to the debate after Wall Street brought our economy down, or just about brought it down, the response to the federal reforms in terms of new regulatory framework, which is starting to be implemented in this country, in Europe, and the compensation is now taking different forms, less on the cash side in terms of these kind of bonuses like we used to see, where we get a big windfall this time of year, right about budget time, and then we'd spend just about all that money. So instead, it's more deferred compensation, payouts over time, stock options, higher base salaries. So it certainly is an industry that is returning to health faster than other sectors of our economy. But I think it's a good thing that now compensation is more tied to long-term sustainable profitability. I think that's a good trend, and I hope that trend continues.
I think just about everybody on all sides of the political debate would agree that that's a good thing if compensation is more tied to long-term profitability. But let me ask you to put together some of these numbers that are a little perplexing to me as to how they fit side by side. So if Wall Street had its second most profitable year on record last year, more than $27 billion in profit, how come Wall Street's contribution to the state's tax coffers has fallen from 20% of all state revenue to 13%? And for New York City, the drop is even steeper in percentage terms, almost 50%. It went from 13% of state of city revenues to 7%. Do I have those numbers from your report correct?
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind, you know, we're mixing a lot of numbers here. So some of the numbers speak to, you know, in individual compensation. Some of it speaks to, you know, corporate profits. So you have different tax structures, and bear in mind the huge losses that the street sustained had tax implications in terms of reducing a tax liability over a period of time, and some of that's still being worked out. So, I think we need to move a little bit more away from the huge losses and all the tax consequences and the implications of that before we get to a point where we're going to see a return on the business side to some of the tax revenue that we had before. And in terms of the, you know, an individual's taxes, you know, as you also pointed out at the start, you know, the street lost about 30,000 jobs. So we do have fewer people working in that part of our economy. Again, it's an evolving picture. So you look at the last few months of 2010, really from August through December, we started to see some job growth once again. About 3,600 jobs were added, and the Department of Labor is going to update the employment figures next month in March, and it's very possible we'll see that in fact even more than 3,000 mm-hmm. jobs were added.
Put that yep. together for me. How mm-hmm. does it make sense if Wall Street had its second most profitable year ever, that it's still down by 25,000 to 30,000 jobs compared to 2 years earlier? Does it mean that each individual who's still employed is making more money?
It varies. I mean, in terms of the bonus figure, for instance, we have the 128,000
average bonus,
and that's an average. Obviously, there are some bonuses that are way in excess of that, and some that are much lower. Base salaries generally certainly are up from what they used to be. But that's going to vary from firm to firm in terms of how they're handling the compensation. And when we do this report, we base it on financial statements of a representative sampling of larger and smaller firms. We talk to folks in the industry. We look at tax data from the Department of Taxation and Finance. We look at information from the Department of Labor. So we're trying to extrapolate. We can't get to the actual, you know, firm by firm, all the details. So it's hard to give you a more drilled down answer yeah. than a more broad perspective
right.
in terms of what we're seeing.
It just seems that if profits are near a record high, but they've laid off 30,000 people, somebody's making all that money. So I was just wondering if the wealth was more concentrated in fewer hands on Wall Street than it was before the crisis.
I don't know with the data that we have that we can give you
really
an answer to that. Yeah.
All right. Before you go, I want to ask you about one other thing, mm-hmm. and that's what's going on in Wisconsin and other states in terms of the moves to ban collective bargaining for state workers in an attempt to help balance states' budgets. As New York State Comptroller, can you quantify what collective bargaining costs the taxpayers of the state as opposed to other ways of coming up with state worker benefits?
We've never done a study like that. I'm not sure how you would quantify it. I know there was an article in a column the other day that cited a North Carolina study that said it added about 5 or 6%. You know, we're coming up on the 100th anniversary of the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire. How do you quantify the cost of workplace safety and, mm-hmm. and fire prevention? I mean, and what's the relevance of that? Because, you know, we're trying to move forward as a society. So from my point of view, the right for workers generally, whether they be public or private, to be organized and to have collective bargaining is part of a progressive view of where a democracy should be headed. So
you support the collective bargaining. But then let me ask
yeah.
you the Scott Walker question, as the governor of Wisconsin might ask it. I mean, you enacted as comptroller some pay-to-play barriers for companies wanting business from your office, didn't you?
Yes.
Why is that different, Scott Walker would probably ask, for public employees who have so much influence over who's elected to negotiate against them on behalf of the taxpayers?
Well, you know, again, I think the ability of individuals, whether they're in a union or not, or whether they're in a citizens advocacy group, you know, we all in different ways want to be part of influencing government. And I think you need to be careful about drawing the line. If you take out everyone that may have an interest in decisions that government's going to make, you won't have too many people that you'd have participating. I mean, from my point of view, what we need to do broadly is move to public financing of most of our elections, because when you have public financing, you're not dependent on contributions, whether it's from wealthy individuals or unions or from anybody else. But until we do that, I don't think you can just broadly eliminate, whole classes of people. I mean, I just don't know how you still have a participatory system. The real solution to all of this, wherever the money's coming from, is to have it be through some kind of a public mechanism, so you don't have elected officials having to go around and fundraise and beg for money. And then when you have even the appearance of compromise, even if not the reality of it.
So why single out companies that won contracts from the comptroller's office?
Well, I think what was different in this case is that you had a situation of corruption, with people getting special access and making millions of dollars in what had been a process not of making decisions on investments based on the investment potential, but rather on a personal connection and a personal enrichment. I think it's hard to compare the Hank Morris situation as an example to union members contributing to a fund that helps support various candidates. I mean, I think to somehow extend corruption and personal profit to folks being engaged in the political process and supporting candidates, I think that's a stretch.
All right, and we leave it there with the New York State Comptroller, Tom DiNapoli, just out with his Wall Street Report for 2010. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we will talk to our own Wallace Almeida, who will introduce us to a brand new feature here at WNYC called The Pin. What is The Pin? We'll tell you in a minute.